CoOptimus.com presents the CoOptiCast.
And welcome back to another CoOptiCast. This is CoOptiCast episode number 34 for Tuesday, December the 29th, 2009. And it's a very special CoOptiCast this evening to wrap up the decade. We're joined by the founding father of Game Informer, the greatest podcast host to grace the 1UP offices, the king of Evil Avatar Radio, Mr. Philip Kohler.
I mean, I like all of those names except for founding father of Game Informer, because that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
You didn't create the magazine?
I did not create the magazine. I love my new job at Game Informer, but there are people who have been there for a long, long damn time, such as our editor-in-chief, Andy McNamara. He's been there since the beginning. It would actually make sense to call him the founding father.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong.
All right. You are the expert.
Phil's a notorious liar. But, I actually... When was Game Informer founded?
I think it was 91 or 92.
How old were you?
Geez, I don't even know if I was born at that point. Man.
I know. But anyway. That's just a tribute to your greatness, because you founded a magazine in your infancy.
Yeah.
You were four. It's pretty amazing.
Amazing.
I was a little bit older than four, but I was writing pretty early, so...
You were writing at a collegiate level. So...
In crayon.
So as you've heard, Mike is here as well.
Yes.
And we got a jam-packed episode, so we're going to jump right into what you've been playing. We'll start with Phil. Phil, what have you been playing?
Well, I think I will start by talking about the stuff that's already out. I played a bunch of Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 this weekend, and it was kind of exciting for me because... Left 4 Dead is one of those series that I love Valve, but for some reason I never really played the original Left 4 Dead when it came out last year.
Blasphemy.
I played a little bit on PC, but not too much. But I really wanted to get into the series when Left 4 Dead 2 came out, but I was a little bit intimidated because I'd read all the stuff about how much more difficult it is. And I was like, I don't have the experience with Left 4 Dead 1. I don't have as much experience as most of the people who are playing the sequel, so I didn't want to drag people down. So I bought Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 both for 360 and took them home with me over the holidays, and I played through all of Left 4 Dead 1 with a buddy of mine, and then started into Left 4 Dead 2. So we got in a lot of zombie killing.
Excellent. They're definitely some of my favorite co-op games right now.
Yeah, they're very pure co-op experiences, which I like. I definitely like that. Although one thing that kind of struck me about it is that the pacing in Left 4 Dead 1, but especially in Left 4 Dead 2, is so nonstop. You're just constantly being hit by more zombies and more crap, and like it's very intense that it gets a little bit exhausting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I pointed that out in my review, that this game just, like, especially Left 4 Dead 2, just grabs you by the throat and doesn't let you go. And even when it gives you a moment between the crescendo moments, it's like 10 seconds before you're screwed again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, if you wait around too long, it just, the AI director's like, here, have two chargers. You're like, please stop.
And the 360 version, at least when it first came out, had a very, very specific balance problem that Nick said made it not very enjoyable at
times.
How
so?
Well, I just felt that they basically took the PC version of Left 4 Dead 2 and put it on 360, where the first Left 4 Dead, you could actually see some of the areas that they balanced it for the console. There was actually, like, some of the levels were a little bit different in the placement of some things and stuff, and it just felt like you were hindered a little bit in Left 4 Dead 2 on the 360.
Sure.
It's subtle, but if you play both versions... Sure. I think it's something you could pick up.
And have they
on.
Fixed that now, do you think?
I don't know if they fixed it so much as I've gotten used to it. Left 4 Dead 1 on the 360, I could easily play on advanced with a good group of people and make it through to the end. And on 2, the same group of people, we can't even make it through most of the levels. I mean, not without significant frustration.
I always thought that was kind of the point, as just a, like... this is a sequel, so we're trying to amp it up, including amping up the difficulty and everything, which, you know, whether or not that's what you want from a sequel, I mean, I thought that was kind of the point with this, because just the intensity of it seems like part of the experience of the game to me.
Oh, yeah. Have you tried playing it on realism mode
God,
yet?
No.
Do you know what that does?
Doesn't that turn off basically all the HUD indicators and just everything?
Yeah, the entire HUD is removed.
I can't even imagine. And I just looking through, I was looking through achievements for the original, and there's one achievement for making it through a whole campaign without doing any friendly fire damage to anyone, and I'm just like, I can't imagine doing that. Like, I don't know, even with all the HUD indicators, like, I don't know how I would not hit people with my guns.
Play it on easy,
I guess.
A lot of the achievements in the first one are very easy to get if you just load it up on the beginner difficulty, because you're not going to hit other people because it's not nearly as frantic. Like you're so not in danger of dying that you don't really worry about things like
Fair
that.
Enough.
And if you play with the, I'm pretty sure if you play with the AI will never do team damage.
Okay, fair enough. Well, either way, I couldn't imagine it, so, yeah, I don't know. I love it, though. I mean, I'm glad that I finally have had a chance to sort of dig into this series a little bit, and I'm a huge Valve fanboy, so it's good to fill that out and be like, all right, I've played this Valve game as well now.
And you'd be proud to know that it has a little bit of Psychonauts heritage.
Really? I did not know that.
Chet at Valve, you know, used
oh.
to work at, you know, he worked on
that makes sense.
On Psychonauts, and he is one of the writers
that
at
totally
Valve.
Makes sense. And man, the writing in the game, like, for a game that doesn't revolve around story that much, the characters are still really damn funny and interesting.
Well, you know where Chet's originally from, right?
Old Man
That's
Murray.
Right. Yep.
Yep, Old Man Murray. So pretty cool. All right, let's move on here. We're giving
whatever. That's all right.
Podcast.
We want to do a six-hour podcast. This is Phil Kohler's show. Come on. I've also been playing a ton of Forza 3, which has totally captured my attention, unlike most racers do. For some reason, I normally only love arcade racers, but for some reason the Forza series has always kind of drawn me in. It's just accessible enough that I'm able to really get into it, even though it's a sim. So yeah, Forza 3 has been sucking a ton of my time. I think I've probably spent close to, like, between driving and just, like, messing around in menus and everything, I've probably played close to 10 to 15 hours, and I think my progress indicator right now says that I have completed, like, 6 or 7% of the game. So, like...
How many seasons are you through? Like, I think... Is that what they call it?
Yeah,
seasons?
Yeah. I'm in the middle of the third or fourth, I think. Fourth.
Yeah.
But, it seems like there's just an insane, like, almost stupid amount of content in this game. Which is great, because I don't buy racing games that often. So, I like, when I do pick up a racing game, I like for there to be a lot of content in it so that I can just play it slowly over the course of a year whenever I'm feeling like a racing game. So, yeah, Forza 3. I've been enjoying that a lot. And the other game that I spent most of my holiday playing was Darksiders, which I happened to get an early copy of from the office, and I don't think I can talk too much about it, but I think our review is going to be up on the site by the time this podcast is up, and I feel comfortable going ahead and saying I really, really liked Darksiders a lot.
That makes me very happy. I've been looking forward to that one.
I just remember playing it at A3 last year, and they had a little, like, the wall run thing. Where like, you, instead of, like, shimmying along a wall when you grab
you
grab it and you run along. It's like, okay, why doesn't every game have this feature in it? Because it just makes sense.
And then Prince of Persia did it last year.
That's true. Yeah, it's... I mean, they've kind of pitched this as this mashup of God of War-style combat and Zelda-style exploration and dungeons and puzzles. But it actually, like, fulfills that promise. It's not just buzzwords that they're throwing out, like, it's not just them saying, we're like these games, and they're awesome too, and so we're going to be awesome. Like, this game is actually brings those together in a way that works and creates its own sort of unique feel. So I just really enjoyed that game. And also, the other thing I like about it is that it's a long game. I think we've gotten kind of used to action games being, you know, probably 7 to 10 hours. My first playthrough of this took me close to 20.
Nice.
Wow. So it's lengthy, and some of the dungeons in it are just incredibly long and intricately designed. The level design is brilliant. So, yeah, I don't want to say too much, but Darksiders is awesome. I hope people check it out.
So you're saying it's the best Zelda game since Okami?
Yeah, I might. I liked Twilight Princess a lot. I'm one of those people who love Twilight Princess, but this is sort of the Zelda game that I've been waiting for in a lot of ways.
Excellent. So, who's next, Nick?
Why don't you go, Mike?
Okay. I have been playing a lot of the Usual Suspects. I played a little bit of Borderlands, and we have talked at length about that, so I won't go too much into it. Checked out Alien Breed Evolution, which is, I don't know, I think it's pretty fun, but it's a little samey most of the way through. It's like, you know, alien bust in, you shoot it, then you go flip a switch, and you get magically assigned the next quest, which is, of course, flip another switch, you know, halfway across the level. And the co-op was actually really crazy intense. I did not you said when we were booting up, like, this is really hard, and damn if you weren't lying. My god, it was just like we got mobbed and mauled and just destroyed.
And it can't help that you kind of suck at video games. Like,
I know, I'm terrible.
That's really gotta, like, make things worse.
Whose bright idea was it to put me on staff of a gaming website?
I've always wondered about that. What's the deal?
Well, you know why I play co-op is so I can, you know, ride the coattails of all the other good players.
Oh, so that actually makes sense.
Yeah, you know, my dirty secret has been aired. I've been, since it came out on PSN for, you know, download, I've been playing Final Fantasy VIII again because I really like RPGs that you can just destroy the system and exploit it to hell. And that is one of the prime examples I have found in the gaming history. I played the Saboteur all the way through for review, and I really liked it. I wish that Pandemic had a little more time to work on it, but, you know, a lot of people are probably growing pretty tired of the open world games that have been coming out this fall and all year, but it has its own charm, and it has one of the best soundtracks I have heard in a game in a long time.
Is that worth picking up? Like, give it to me straight, because I've been really back and forth and curious about it. I almost picked it up to play over my Christmas break, and I'm still kind of thinking about it in the back of my head.
What did you think of Mercs 2?
I enjoyed the, like, hour and a half that I spent with Mercs 2 before I kind of got bothered by how buggy it was.
It's not as buggy as Mercs 2. I don't know, like, I liked it a lot because, you know, even down to, like, two of the achievements, you can really tell that Pandemic liked Crackdown. Uh-huh. There's a lot of moments where you're just showered in hails of gunfire, and, you know, you're frantically running through a level, planting explosives, and blowing up Nazis, and the moments of excitement in that game are incredibly fun, but it also suffers a little bit of, you know, a little bit of Pandemic not taking lessons from other open sure. world games. Like, there's a really involving climbing mechanic. You're supposed to go sneak around the rooftops, take pot shots at Nazis, and a lot of the areas that you can hide from Nazis are on the rooftops. But for some reason, they decided that in order to climb buildings, you have to mash the A button for every step you take. And it ended up making it so I just didn't bother climbing stuff. It's really annoying, but, you know, the characters are all pretty likable. And the story, you know, they don't do the World War II thing where it's like all, you know, all bravery and honor. And, like, you're supporting the French Resistance, but they kind of come across as a little, it's like Les Mis, really. Okay. You know, they're, you know, flag-waving patriots, and, you know, a few of them are actually just kind of, they're brave, but they're also really cowardly, and they make Sean do all their dirty work because they just don't want to do anything but drink wine and, you know, have sex. But I really liked it, and I think a lot of places have dropped its price. Probably a lot of the retail outlets are saying, you know what, it's not selling well because it was an early December title and a lot of people probably already bought their games for the season, and Pandemic got shuttered, so they you know, they feel comfortable in dropping it. I've seen it for like 45.
Really?
So I have a feeling if you're on the edge about it, you might want to just until it's
I feel like,
$30
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea, because I feel like for that price, for like $30 or $40, I would definitely grab it and enjoy it, but maybe not $60. It's good thinking.
But the really crazy thing about it is that when you think of like mission structures in an open world game, you're kind of like, okay, I'm going to jack this car and go shoot this dude and then run away. Or I might sneak into a base. And what this does is, you know, the explosives that you have at your disposal really make it so that you can really screw with Nazis in this game. Like, you can sneak into their base and plant explosives and wear a disguise and walk away and then lure the entire base over to an area by detonating a bunch of their support structures and things. And everything you blow up actually decreases the difficulty of the game. So, like, in GTA, when you get in trouble and the cops are chasing you, you know, however much havoc you've caused or however long that you're being chased by them kind of dictates your star rating. And this does a little bit of the same, but there's all these sniper nests and vehicle depots and things littered throughout the city, which will all spot you and you kind of reset the alarm and everything. Yeah. But if you take your time and actually plan routes to the missions and blow everything up along the way, you can kind of step right outside and get away.
That sort of reminds me a little bit of Red Faction, just insofar as, like, with Red Faction Guerrilla, it seemed like each time you entered a new zone, it was kind of overwhelming, and the enemy forces were really crazy and difficult. But then as you took down their buildings and slowly kind of worked your way in, they became a little bit easier to handle just because they didn't have places to spawn, etc.
It's very similar to that, and I've been talking about it for too long, but there are two things that I really, really loved about the game. The first is the soundtrack, and if you like Ella Fitzgerald, you'll really love it because they included a lot of her stuff. And you know, the song in the introduction of the game is the song that my wife and I did our first dance to at our wedding, which was
adorable.
It was pretty adorable, but she was watching me play it, and I recognize that song. Like, yeah, that's kind of weird, huh? But it really fits. And the other thing is, I mentioned that the Pandemic clearly loved Crackdown, to the point where there is a pair of achievements, one of which for climbing to the very top of the Eiffel Tower, and one for jumping off the top of the Eiffel Tower into the pool of water below it.
Nice.
And I don't know where they got that idea, but it's pretty great. Oh, and one more thing. For some reason, they hid a fully functional version of Duck Hunt in the game. There's this field way out of the way, and there's like this little duck blind. And if you pop up behind it, it gives you a rifle, and ducks start flying out of the bushes in front of you. And it has the little meter. It shows, you know, how, you know, there's X number of rounds. You get three shots to shoot two ducks, and there's, you know, 10 per round, and it just keeps going forever, and it cracks me the hell
up. Is there an achievement for that?
There is an achievement for
awesome.
It.
That's awesome. All right, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. And, let's see, the other game I've been playing is Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
And, that game is awesome.
That game is so good.
I do not care how many people bitch and moan that game is hard, because, yeah, it's hard, but it's fair, and if you can't beat it, you just suck.
Yeah. I do suck. Demon's Souls is very good. I'm glad that you are enjoying that, because I saw you talking about it on Twitter with another buddy of ours who's playing it, and you had mentioned some difficult stuff, so I was afraid that you weren't enjoying it.
No, you know, I have gotten my ass handed to me in so many ways in that game, but the thing is, you always know why you died. It's not like other games where you're put up against impossible waves of things that they're just kicking your butt, or things popping out from behind you that you could never have a chance of seeing. And, you know, with the messaging system and everything, like, you can say, you know, by the way, there's an enemy around this corner, and you'll know about ambushes. And when you fight tough enemies and you don't pay attention to their attack patterns or what they will do, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
it's very much like a rogue. It's a roguelike essentially, but it's more fair than one because you keep all your crap.
Yeah, I was listening to a couple of people talking about it on a podcast and a different podcast than this, and they were saying they were sort of complaining that they thought it was they thought that the fighting wasn't as good as in other action games, like that it wasn't as like balanced or whatever. And it just made me really upset because the problem isn't that the fighting isn't balanced or anything. It's just that it's a unique fighting system. Like, it's not supposed to be really fast-paced like God of War or something. It's supposed to be slow and more strategic.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, wait till your enemy, you know, swings his giant sword or whatever. You duck out of the way and stab him in the back. Like, you know, and you're really rewarded every time you take risks. Like, there's a whole parry system that allows you to pretty much instant kill everything you fight. But if you fail the parry, you will probably die yourself. But I've seen people that are absurdly good at this game that can go and parry everything that comes at them and just own it. And those people, frankly, frighten
me.
Yes.
I do want to mention, too, we have in our the upcoming issue of Game Informer, which you guys should check out. That's a very good magazine. Our upcoming issue 202, we have the top games of 2009. And one of our top 10 lists we have is top 10 villains of the year. One of those villains may or may not be a level from Demon's Souls.
My favorite thing about Demon's Souls, before I hand everything over to Nick, was after spending 2 hours in the first area just exploring and slowly making my way through it, you know, beating the boss, feeling on top of the world, you get your body back for the first time, you're feeling great, and you go through the next area, you're like, I've fought these guys, I can go through it, and then you step outside again, and what is the first thing that happens? A giant dragon flies out of nowhere and roasts you in one hit. And it's just kind of like, oh.
I killed the shit out of that dragon.
Yeah, I don't have
any
ranged stuff.
Am I allowed to swear? I just swore. I apologize, guys.
It's okay.
I have a potty mouth. I'm sorry.
I know. But, Nick, have you been playing some games?
I have played a game or two in my time. And not as many as you guys, though, unfortunately. It's been a lot of quick stuff. Alien Breed Evolution, like you mentioned, we did some co-op in that. And played a bunch of Pixel Junk Shooter with my cousin.
Nice.
Which was pretty cool. We had posted a co-op review of it and stuff, and, you know, we were kind of, I wouldn't say we were down on it, but we were just kind of like, well, it doesn't really add much. But my cousin and I really enjoyed it. We played through most of the game in co-op. And the little mechanic where, like, you can save somebody when they're crashing, like, it's really tough to pull off, but when you do pull it off, and you like you just save them like that split second before they hit the ground,
you feel like
a
hero. Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty satisfying, you know. And of course, there's those comedy moments where you're trying to save your buddy and you grab like a miner instead, and he crashes and blows up. But
yeah, I did the review of that, and the game is absurdly fun, and the co-op is also fun, but there's just a little. There's too many little things about it that bothered me, and that the fact that it doesn't really change the game other than that you're able to, you know, avoid losing a life.
Yeah, I mean, they missed the boat with, you know, because the whole thing is about two conflicting elements, right? So they missed the boat with the co-op of having, you know, one person with a lava and one person with water and how they can, like, work together to solve puzzles. Like, that whole piece is missing through the whole game. And I think if they would have added that, it would have definitely made the co-op a lot better. But,
definitely.
I mean, as it stands now, it's still a really good game.
And the music is awesome. But with a pixel junk game, that's pretty much a given.
Yeah. I've also been playing a little bit of Phantasy Star Zero on the DS.
Bum bum.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to like the game because I really liked Phantasy Star Portable on the PSP, but it just feels like there's not enough stuff there on Phantasy Star Zero, and I think we talked about it, maybe it was the last podcast, of how frustrating the controls can be with it. The lock-on and the camera button is the same thing, and a lot of times it gets really wonky. You don't know what you're looking at and what you're attacking. And so... and then finally played a little bit of Left 4 Dead 2, finally wrapped up the last campaign in that last night on the 360. It was a pretty epic ending. There's three of us in the AI, and we got to the chopper in the bridge level, and we got in the chopper, and the AI person just stayed behind and literally, like, you know, it won't take off unless they're dead. And somehow she managed to survive. It was Rochelle was the last AI person left. She managed to survive for like a full 5 minutes out in the horde while we waited in the chopper, and we fought off tanks and chargers and everything else. The game just kept throwing at us, and we were just cowered in the corner of the chopper, whacking at it with machetes and everything else. I'm like, just die already. We want to leave.
Yeah, Phil, you said you're worried about not being good at Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
The AI is so abysmal in that game that is better than the AI.
Yeah, I definitely know that. I was playing with a buddy split screen. So, I mean, it was us two and then the AI. So, I definitely...
Yeah.
I am familiar with how bad the AI can be in that game.
And the thing is, the AI was not nearly that bad in the first one. And it must have been the upgrades they made to the AI director that just screwed everything. But there's a gulf of difference between the AI behavior in both those games.
Indeed. So let's now that we've spent a good chunk of our podcast on what we've been playing.
It's like a one-up podcast. We spend like an hour talking about crap we've been playing, and then we move to the meat.
Let's talk about news. And we've got some good co-op news to talk about. First up is what came out today, actually, is some Borderlands content.
That came out today?
Under Doom.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Yeah, for the 360.
I need to catch up on Borderlands. It's been on my like back burner of like I really want to go back and play through that game, and now there's two DLC out for it. Ugh.
And I'm stuck with a PC version and no one to play it with.
I have the PC version as well, so we should play some.
Excellent, yeah. And I don't have any of the DLC yet, so you know, you don't have to worry about that.
So Mad Moxie's Underdome Riot came out today, and it is a arena based add on for the game. I guess it's been akin to Halo 3 ODST's Firefight.
I've been told that more so than the last DLC, this DLC is very much co-op focused. Like, you want to play this co-op. If you're playing it single player, it's just not very fun because it's just an arena.
Plus, Moxie's quite the looker, too.
True.
She's looking for a new husband.
Yeah.
That brought out way... You remember that article we posted about the adrenaline junkies?
Yes.
I put those together in my head, and the thought was kind of horrifying.
if you haven't checked out that DLC, get it, probably. I don't know, I haven't seen... Have you guys seen any reviews of it yet or anything? Seen any impressions?
I think there might be a review up on GameInformer.com. Hold on, let me look.
Well, there we go.
I know that we had...
Phil just loves to do the plug.
Man, this is such a good website. Have you been to this GameInformer? Hey, our Darksiders review is up already. What do you know?
So there we go.
I know that we had an article with impressions. It might not have been a review, though. So either way, there's something up on there.
But yeah, so I think the biggest thing it added, besides like the arena combat, it added a chest, the stash that you can like store stuff in outside of your inventory to trade and stuff. And I know a lot of people were looking for that because that's kind of a standard in the action RPG genre, like Diablo and stuff like that. So that's pretty good. Let's move on. I did some coverage of this Combat Arms game. And I thought it might make an interesting discussion. I don't know if either of you have played it. It's a free PC first-person shooter from Nexon, and they added basically their zombie mode to the game. it's an 8-player co-op mode. But what's interesting about Combat Arms is while the game's free, all the premium like weapons and outfits and stuff in it cost money.
Of course.
And it's not like $1 or like $2. Like an example is like they were selling like packs, and one was like the sniper pack, right? And that gets you like a sniper outfit, your sniper rifle, your sidearm and stuff. It's like $30. And people are buying this stuff.
It's that I forget the exact numbers in the term, but something like the 90-10 model, and it might be something closer like 98-2. But yeah. you give away your game, the core game, for free, and 98% of people or whatever will not buy anything. But that 2% from a sufficiently large pool of players will earn you so much money. It's why crap like Maple Story is just raking in the dough. It's because almost everybody plays that for free, but there are people that will just drop hundreds of dollars on crap for their little pixelated avatar.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's like over 2 million people that play this game.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, you have 2% of 2 million, and that's a pretty decent chunk.
And those games, you know, usually don't have much of an overhead, you know, because they're not very taxing on systems, so it's not that hard to maintain servers for it.
I think it's the Unreal Engine 2 game. Like, I know it's not 3. I think it's the older Unreal Engine. So, I mean, it's not bad looking, but it's not great looking.
Right.
So... but yeah, I checked that out, and we posted some coverage of it. I mean, the mode's kind of fun. It does some interesting things, like the zombies are strapped with dynamite, so they get close to you. It can make for an interesting thing, especially if they get inside the house. Moving on. Everyone's old favorite co-op game, Duke Nukem, that never saw a sequel. Duke Nukem 3D, I should say. That never saw a sequel. Well, we got a great article from Wired.
It is really great, seriously.
It's basically the history of Duke Nukem Forever, and to some extent, 3D Realms, and how George Broussard and... Scott Miller with the whole shareware model and stuff. Anyway, but it really goes through it and kind of choreographs what happened through each year, and how, you know, every year it was, oh, it's coming soon, oh, and then it went to when it's ready, and then it went to non-existent, and then earlier this year it went to this whole staff is laid off.
I think the biggest thing that it illustrates is the need for a developer to have a proper program manager or project manager.
Yeah,
because George Broussard, you know, he was heavy into the design and code of the first game, and it was so his baby that he couldn't separate the product from himself. And since apparently he's such a notorious perfectionist that he you know, until very late in the game, they actually brought, you know, they didn't bring in anybody that could actually manage the project, and by then it was doomed.
Yeah. It's very sad. I mean, above and beyond that, if you've been watching some of the other news that came out, what's left of 3D Realms there, it said Duke Nukem's not dead. There's still more stuff coming. There's a DS game coming out. I think a PSP game. Duke Nukem Manhattan Project is coming to Xbox Live Arcade, which is the side-scroller.
Yeah.
The 3D side-scroller. And they said Duke Nukem Forever isn't quite dead, though I think the legal battle that's going to kind of go over all of that is going to hold it from ever seeing the light of day.
We'll see.
My guess is we will get a nice source code leak of that at some point, and that'll be all we'll ever get of it. So, moving on, in the maybe too little too late column is Resident Evil 5 DLC coming. It's going to be almost a full year after the game was released. But it's called Lost in Nightmares, and it's the second of, it's called Desperate Escape, which is the second piece of DLC. The first one was called Lost in Nightmares, and the first one had Jill and Chris going to, what the heck's that guy? I can never remember the guy's name, the mansion,
old decrepit dude.
Yeah, old decrepit dude's mansion. He doesn't need a real name. So that's that piece, and then the new piece is actually Jill and Josh, who was introduced in Resident Evil 5, and that's supposed to be, each one's supposed to be between 2 and 3 hours of content, and I think each piece is $5, so pretty decent, but I'm just not sure how many people are really gonna, you know, even still have their copies of RE5.
Are these gonna be rolled into that,
there's going to be a gold edition, I think they're calling it, and then all that content will be in at the end, but they're going to be releasing, like, outfits and some other stuff, basically over, like, a 5-week period, one piece of content each week, and the two episodic pieces of DLC kind of highlighted at $5 each. So, well, it looks pretty good. I don't know if I really have interest in going back and playing them, though.
I might look at them when the new big thing comes out in March.
Yeah.
Whenever that's supposed to come, but I don't know. I got, like, I really liked Resident Evil 5, but I have since traded it in because, yeah. You know, you can only go back to that so many times, and the game wants you to play through it a couple times right out of the bag.
Yeah. So let's keep moving on here, and now I've got the two Game Informer stories.
Ooh,
I call them.
Those are good ones.
These are just
I
for
like
you,
these.
Phil. I know they are. We called it the Co-op Revolution 2009. You guys called it, what did you call it?
Co-op Condition, I think.
Yeah, Co-op Condition.
It's an article. We have it online and in the magazine, I believe.
Yeah, the magazine's just like a snippet of the online
yep.
one. But you guys interviewed a couple of big designers in terms of co-op. Randy Pitchford, Cliff Bleszinski, and kind of just talked about, you know, what goes into designing a co-op game, why certain decisions were made, you know, why is there split screen, why isn't there split screen with online, like a bunch of things. And you guys pulled, what was it, 10,000 or so
people?
Yeah,
I think so.
And got basically, you know, what they're looking for in their co-op experience. And there's some pretty interesting charts and graphs to go along with it. And, you know, for us, you know, with the co-op focused site, it's good to see a major gaming magazine take notice.
Yeah, I mean,
like that,
and
really,
like, we could talk about this a little bit later when we start talking about the games that are coming out, co-op games that are coming out in 2010. But if you look at the major releases, major video game releases of 2009, like the best selling stuff, the stuff that was people were the most hyped about, I think the vast majority of them had co-op modes. I mean, I think it's becoming very clear that, like, co-op is almost as expected as multiplayer these days.
Yeah, I mean, whenever the MPD numbers come out, we kind of put up an article to highlight what games in the, you know, the top 10 are co-op. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the majority of them have a co-op mode that are in that top 10 selling games for the month.
I think a lot of this goes back to some of the discussions we had really early in the site history, was that, you know, the move to online-enabled consoles really kind of brought back the co-op. Because, you know, how many old side-scrolling NES games have co-op? There are a ton.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had the kind of the N64 PlayStation era where N64 had a lot of, like, four-player party stuff and, you know, GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. But, you know, you didn't see too much of the simultaneous co-op stuff going on. And then, you know, with Xbox Live and PSN and everything, it's all just come back. And it's, you know, as developers think of newer and better ways, I mean, like, look at what Demon's Souls does with co-op. Like, who would have thought of that?
Yeah, it's really unique.
But, you know, people are doing such new and different things, and, you know, online connectivity and voice chat and everything, you know, really lets people experience the co-op, whether they have a buddy sitting next to them on the couch or they're, you know, a few thousand miles away.
Yeah. It's definitely good, and it's kind of funny because since you guys put out that article, Phil, I've seen, well, G4 put out a little TV snippet basically kind of talking about the same thing, about 2009 was like a really good year for co-op games. Somebody, CVG, put out something basically kind of the same thing about how co-op has been so popular in 2009. And, you know, I think a lot of the places actually missed it. I mean, 2008, when we started the site, was a pretty big year for co-op too, because we saw Electronic Arts take a risk with a title like Army of Two, which was, you know, a co-op only focused title. So, you know, there was quite a few good releases that year as well. Gears of War 2 and stuff like that.
Wasn't Left 4 Dead that year too?
Left 4 Dead.
Yeah,
right. So,
huge year. And Left 4 Dead almost single-handedly spawned, you know, I remember, you know, Aliens Colonial Marines, you know, they brought that one like right out after Left 4 Dead started, you know, they said, "Wow, this game's really popular. You know, maybe we should say, hey, we've got something that's got a potential good use of the license." And whether that game will actually come or not is kind of, you know, on the edge of a knife right now, but, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, so definitely check out the Game Informer article there and get your co-op stats on.
Yeah.
There was another article in Game Informer. In fact, it was in the magazine.
I know so much about this game.
It was about a new Transformers game called The War for Cybertron. And one little snippet stood out at us in the description of it in that it will have a co-op mode.
Yes.
And I believe from what I've read, like, there's always three guys.
Well, okay, so here's the deal, is when I went out to see the game, and I wrote the feature article for Game Informer, Activision was not ready to reveal how many players are going to be in co-op. So they're not talking about how many players co-op will be, but in every mission that we saw of the game, it looked like there were three robots with, like, three Transformers working together. So, you know, you can take from that what you will. There's nothing official announced, but it seemed like a good chance that it could be around that number.
Yeah,
so
the preview was pretty interesting. The artwork that's been released for it...
thankfully, really completely unlike the abortions that Michael Bay shat out.
Yeah, they're definitely not going off the movie designs. It's sort of a, from what they told us, they're going for a sort of mix between the old school, like, G1 Transformers, and then trying to put their own sort of spin on things. I think the design for it, the art stuff, has been really incredible so far. You know, who knows if they can pull that off in the actual game. With the gameplay, but the art looks great.
Well, you know, this was the year that we saw a good Batman game.
Exactly.
So maybe it's about time we have a good Transformers game.
Exactly. That's sort of like what I'm hoping. Although I am worried, I think we're going to start seeing more... I mean, not worried necessarily, this is a good thing, but I think we're going to start seeing more and more licensed games that are sort of pitched like that, where it's like, this is going to do for X what Arkham Asylum did for Batman. But, I mean, if they can actually pull that off, that's fantastic. And so far, everything I've seen looks really good. If you don't mind me throwing in another quick plug, if people want to check out more about this game, we have a ridiculous amount of stuff that we've put online at gameinformer.com/Transformers. And we've had a whole month of coverage. So we have character profiles, interviews with the art team, interviews with the game director. We've got a podcast, all sorts of stuff.
Great, yeah. Looking forward to it for sure. I grew up with tons of Transformers. I think most of us probably had plenty of toys and loved the movie and watched the cartoons. And so, anyway, let's move on to a couple quick things, and then we will get to our preview of the 2010 co-op games. Going on, I think for the next 2 days, I think it ends the 2nd or 3rd of January, is Steam Deals. Steam as in the digital distribution service.
Oh.
There is crazy deals.
Why am I broke, Nick? Why?
I mean, lots and lots of great games for like $5.
Like Torchlight. Oh my god.
Yeah. So, check it out. There's some good co-op titles there to snag. I think I saw, like, Space Siege was, like, $2.50 today. Like, I mean, just, like, for that price, I'll buy just about any game just to, you know, check it out. So, some other news. We had a few delays. Lost Planet 2 was kind of delayed indefinitely, though that sounds worse than it is. It was just moved out of this quarter for Capcom, which probably means May-ish release date, June. I don't know, we'll see.
I feel like a summer release for Lost Planet 2 would be a very smart idea. With all the big spring games coming out.
The original one was a summer release.
No, the original one was definitely January.
Yeah. Really?
I remember it was like, it came out like the 2nd.
Maybe
January.
I'm thinking of the PC release of it, because that was delayed. Oh well.
And then another game that was delayed, and this one, again, doesn't have a date, is SOCOM Fireteam Bravo 3, and that's the PSP title that has 4-player co-op. No date was given for that, but that was already pushed back from November to January something, and now the January date is moved to a big question mark. So we'll see where that ends up falling. But we did get some good news about Crackdown 2 in that it will be coming in the first half of next year instead of the second half, most likely not to compete with Microsoft's own juggernaut, which is Halo Reach. So that'll be good. Some four-player co-op action there.
I just want to blow shit up with you, Nick.
Indeed. So with that, let's take a quick short break and back with the 2010 co-op gaming preview. Going to talk the games of 2010, specifically the co-op games of 2010, and there is plenty. I was putting this list together and I was like, holy moly, we've got quite a few already, and it's not even just little arcade titles and stuff. There's some pretty big releases, and just in the first two or three months. The first one is coming almost right away on January 12th, and that is Army of Two, the 40th day. We have a two-player co-op campaign in it, as well as the four-player co-op extraction mode.
I'm still kind of dodgy on extraction being a pre-order thing.
What? Yeah, so if you don't know that extraction... Yeah, it's for the first 30 days, oh, if you pre-order the game, you have access to extraction mode. And then after that, they'll release it as DLC for free. So
it's kind of lame, I have to be honest.
Yeah, it's weird to split the player base like that. And you know our thought. We've had a few editorials and discussions on the stupidity of pre-order bonuses, so we don't need to go there.
All right.
But you guys looking forward to it? Did you play the first game?
I did not. I've always kind of wanted to go back, but I always... The impression that I get with that, with the first game, and sort of the impression I'm getting with the second one as well, is that like it's sort of fun as a co-op game, but only in the way that any game is more fun with co-op, not in that it's actually a very good game. And I don't know, I haven't seen much of the second one, but that's just the impression the first one, everything I heard about the first one left me with. So I'm concerned about the second one for that reason, and unsure if they're... I don't know much about it, so I don't know if they've gone back and really fixed much of the game or made it more fun on a just gameplay level.
Well, you should go to cooptimist.com because we have a lot of coverage of the game. In fact, we went to two community events where we covered a lot of the stuff from it. So
what are you feeling about it so far?
Honestly, I wasn't the person that went, so I don't know. Okay. But from the demo, I think they made it a little bit grittier and it might have fixed up a few of the things. And I dare say they made it more reliant on co-op. So it might be a turnoff for people that won't necessarily get to play it in co-op right away. Like, I think it might be more of a requirement to play it in co-op. So, it's a fun game. I had a lot of fun playing through the first one with my buddy. And I'm definitely planning on picking up the second one, so I guess we'll see.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so moving on. Xbox Live Arcade is getting Serious Sam HD, The First Encounter, on January 13th. I think... Mike, what do you think? Three times we've said it's coming out on the podcast?
Yeah, I have stopped giving release dates for it on the podcast because every time I name a date, on that date they say, oh, 2 weeks. Oh, yeah. Next month. Oh, 2010.
So, while the PC version's been out for a good month now, a month and a half, the Xbox Live Arcade version will be out. It'll only have 4-player online co-op, while the PC version has 16-player online co-op, which is just insane. What do you guys think? Looking forward to it? Think you're going to try it on a console, actually?
I'll probably pick up the PC version, down the line, because that game, I don't see how that's going to work on a console. There's just too much going on.
Yeah, I love Serious Sam, but it doesn't seem like a game that's made for console, so I'm curious to see if they can pull it off. And I would also mention that, the reasons I love Serious Sam aren't really co-op related, so I'm definitely interested in seeing what it's like as a co-op game as well.
Very fun. Definitely very fun. White Knight Chronicles is coming out February 2nd, or February 10th for the PS3. And it's actually White Knight Chronicles International Edition. What a glorious name that is.
White Knight Chronicles We Fixed It Edition.
I think that's the idea, yeah.
And, yeah. So they it came out in Japan, I think,
last
in the
December.
Springtime. Was it December last year? So it was over a full year. And there were some issues with it. But there is a 4-player online co-op mode. There's specific co-op quests. I guess you can create like your own little town in it, like as a social hub that people can join into, and you can do like trading and stuff like that. But now there's actual voice chat in the game.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the co-op, like things you do in the co-op, can affect your single player character or at least the game.
So. Yeah, it's just that they're different quests than the single player game. Yeah.
I'm excited about this one. I'm a little bit of a Level 5 fan. I've liked a lot of their previous stuff, and I'm curious to see, because I know this one got a lot of sort of negative buzz when it was released in Japan, but I also know that they've gone back and tried to fix it, as we mentioned.
Level 5 is a bit of a weird spot with me, because they put out some fantastic stuff, and they put out some trash. So
like, what trash are you talking about? Because I want to challenge
that.
I
absolutely could not stand Rogue Galaxy after about 2 hours.
I totally understand. I respect not being able to stand Rogue Galaxy, but I don't think it was a bad game. It was just, it wasn't everybody's game. And
I think it's just they, when they try and set out and do something on their own, sometimes they do, you know, like Jeanne d'Arc was actually really good, and I enjoyed that, but Rogue Galaxy, I just fell flat in almost every regard. Like, it was a competent and pretty game, but it just, there wasn't much there for me.
I mean, like I said, I think it's just a personal preference thing, and I suspect if you didn't like Rogue Galaxy, there's probably a good chance you won't like White Knight Chronicles, because it seems sort of in that similar vein. But we'll see.
However, I do love Professor Layton. So.
Yes. Now, if only there were brain teasers in White Knight Chronicles, co-op brain teasers.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Quick, someone tell them. There's still time.
Yeah.
International edition.
That'll probably Layton have to. Version. They'll have to save that idea for the Professor Layton MMO.
Oh there my god, go. That would be the best thing ever.
All right, moving on. Here, this is an interesting-looking title. Dynasty Warriors Strike Force is coming out February 17th.
So,
that's a 360 PS3 game.
Man, this game was on PSP originally, and heard actually like positive things about the PSP version. It kind of freaked me out, because I was like, really? Wait, Dynasty Warriors, and you're saying good things. Like, apparently it actually changes the formula up, and it's not like just the traditional, like, slicing through tons of people, Dynasty Warriors. It's a little bit different than that.
Well, you fight like animals and stuff.
It's like really over the top. Yeah, it's like really over the top. Apparently, there's like super moves and combined moves you can do.
But isn't it more like
spells you can cast?
Isn't it a little bit more like, from what I could gather, from what I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seemed like this is a little bit more like the Dynasty Warriors interpretation of like Monster Hunter, where you're doing quests and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So it's 4-player online co-op through the whole thing.
Good on,
and like
good
I
on
said,
Koei for trying something new for once. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how many Dynasty Warriors games there's been now. At least a dozen, maybe.
You know, maybe this is awesome and all, but I really want Koei to put out another Guitaro Man, because I love that game, and it's been like 10 years.
Cinema-like.
I would just be afraid of them doing like pulling a Rock Revolution and just doing like a really crappy Guitar Hero ripoff.
Oh, don't say that.
Just
please.
Throwing out there a concern.
Splinter Cell Conviction is coming out February the 23rd, 2010 for 360 and PC. It's got a 2-player co-op campaign that is actually a prequel to the game's single-player campaign. And there's also a bunch of 4-player online co-op modes. I don't know, it's looking pretty good from what I've seen the video so far.
Yes, please. I love me some Splinter Cell.
I mean, yeah, I don't really have any love for the Splinter Cell franchise, but this is the first Splinter Cell that I've been really, really interested in. Just based off of how it's shown so far at E3 and such. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's been in the making for a long time. So they definitely have their work cut out for them in terms of, I think, impressing the gaming press on it. So we shall see. Moving on, a pretty solid PC release, hopefully, and wrapping up the Command & Conquer Tiberian saga is Command & Conquer 4 Tiberian Twilight, which features two-player co-op through the whole campaign. The really unique thing, I guess, with it is players can choose roles. So you can be like defense or offense or support, and depending on the role you choose, is allows you to build certain unit types and bonus types and stuff like that. So that seems to lend itself really well to cooperative play.
So here's the thing that I'm a little bit worried about with this game is, I know it was rumored a while back, and I don't think EA has confirmed it, but I haven't heard them saying anything to the opposite effect either. But when EA announced that they were doing those 1,500 layoffs, one of the big rumors that came out of that was that most of the Command & Conquer development team would be getting laid off after the game was released, and that they had already...
Yeah, I remember that.
They had already been told that. Which, if that's true, you know, that leaves me concerned, like, well, then they have this set amount of time to finish the game, and they know that they don't have a job after that. Are they really going to be trying very hard? And I love the Command & Conquer series, and I thought it was really interesting when they introduced co-op to it. They've done a pretty cool job with that. So I really hope that it turns out okay.
I would almost argue that it might make them try harder, because now they need to go on interviews, and the last game on their resume is going to be like, here's Command & Conquer 4. It got a 90-minute critic or whatever, right? Versus, you know, a 60.
Sure.
So it might make them actually try
Possibly.
Harder.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know.
Mike, I know we played Red Alert 3 together co-op.
Yeah.
And I know you're not a big RTS fan, but...
It depends on the RTS, but the co-op in that... The problem I had with it was that one player could effectively be screwed. And there was a play session that we had where I wasn't paying attention and my base got taken out and I actually could not do anything and you could not do anything to save me. Like, I didn't have enough to rebuild my base, even though I had every option to rebuild it. And there was no way for you to send me money to allow me to, you know, get started again. And I really hope that they fix that with this, because that was hella lame.
So basically, problem is once again that you suck at games.
I suck at navigating radial menus and RTSs on consoles, because that's where it happened. We had much more success in the PC version.
Yeah, we actually did play both versions of it. So
yeah, I'm much more comfortable with an RTS with a mouse, but some people would argue with me, but I don't think that RTS is ever suited for console unless you do something like Pikmin.
Well, according to EA, this is a console exclusive, a PC exclusive.
Yes.
So moving on, we have a March release of Aliens vs. Predator. This is a Rebellion developed title. It's for 360, PS3, and PC. And there's only a little co-op in it, and it's a four-player co-op survival mode where it's Marines versus Aliens. I would much rather have Aliens Colonial Marines at this point, but I guess we'll take what we can get.
Yes.
Is Colonial Marines, is that the Gearbox one?
Yeah, it's the Gearbox one.
I think we'll be hearing more about that next year, probably. Is my guess.
Yeah, I guess, Sega's publishing both those games, and they just decided to shimmy things around.
Yeah, my guess is that they probably didn't want to, they probably don't want to get people thinking about the other one too much until the first one is out, you know? To not distract, take attention away from it, so. Yeah, hopefully Aliens vs. Predator turns out alright. I'm definitely curious to see more on that one, because, I don't know, that game could be great, or it could be really bad.
It's been a while since Rebellion's put out a solid title.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, and I like that it's very ambitious and that it's trying to do the three different groups that you can play as, but we'll see if they pull it off.
So what we were talking about earlier, Socom Fireteam Bravo 3, which is right now. I'm guessing it's going to be an early 2010 release, maybe March-ish, February-ish. And it has four-player online co-op through the game's single-player campaign. I know Jim is looking forward to this game, one of the other editors on our site. I've never really played any of the PSP SOCOM games, but I generally don't like the third-person or first-person shooters on the PSP because of dual analog ease.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I just don't like SOCOM
games. I agree with that, too, unfortunately.
Okay, so let's move on to LEGO Harry Potter Years 1 through 4. I think this is going to be about an April release. Two-player co-op through the entire game as well, in traditional LEGO fashion. It looks pretty good. I mean, I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan or anything, but the settings and stuff look pretty unique, and I think there's supposed to be like 50-some characters in it.
I like the LEGO games on one level, but they always end up boring me to tears about halfway through them. Like, LEGO Indy was awesome, and then about the time I started getting to the end of the Temple of Doom stuff, it was wearing on me. And the same thing happened with the LEGO Star Wars games. Like there's so much novelty to the LEGO thing, and they put so much, you know, silly all ages humor into those games that it you can't dislike them. But there are things like, you know, if you're playing it in co-op, like, there's nothing preventing the other player from just repeatedly dying over and over and tanking whatever. Yeah, you get the brick score, whatever, that fills that plug or whatever. And, you know, someone can just kind of drag on you. I don't know. Like, I like Harry Potter a lot because I'm just a dork, but, I don't know. I'll check it out, maybe.
From what I've seen,
I'm not going to commit to it.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it looks better than LEGO Indiana Jones 2, which just came out a couple months ago. But LEGO Indiana Jones 2 is undoubtedly the worst LEGO game so far. So, I mean, that's not saying a ton that it looks better than that. But hopefully, you know, hopefully they can capture some of that magic that LEGO Star Wars had and really make a good, fun
LEGO
game.
One of the saving graces, maybe, of the game is there's a whole spell system in it, I guess. So it might add enough variety to it to keep it somewhat interesting. Because, I mean, when it comes down to it, most of the LEGO games kind of felt the same after a while. So
they're all, like, if you exclude just the fact that they're all licensed, they almost feel like palette swaps of each other.
I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the audience that this is intended for, but
of course not.
But the problem more is just that, you know, they still need to make a good game, and I think between like LEGO Batman and LEGO Indiana Jones 2, like, they've started really going downhill just with the design in the game. Like, it's not even that they're just the same game, but they're not even good versions of the same game.
Yeah, it was like a LEGO Indy, instead of the levels being made of Legos like some of the, like, the Star Wars ones were, it was an actual honest-to-God jungle that happened to have LEGO stuff in it. And it just felt lame. It's like, come on, guys, make the level out of LEGO. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, and one late addition here. I think it's a March release, is the Dawn of War 2 expansion pack.
Yes,
Chaos
nice. Yes, and I love Dawn of War 2, and I don't mind saying that I voted for it as in the Game of the Year awards for best co-op game of last year. So
it was definitely a lot of fun. I think the only downside I had with it, or downfall I thought it had, was that the progress didn't transfer between players. You know, you didn't get to bring whatever you did in your friend's co-op game back with you to your own.
Yeah.
But the expansion pack, I don't think we've seen too much detail on it yet, but there was still the rumor that it might be more than two-player co-op. So that'll be good. That could be potentially pretty awesome.
I agree.
So that got us to the first quarter of the year, basically. And now we're into May. And May opens up with Skate 3 on the 18th for 360 and PS3. And it's a six-player co-op game, and you might be saying, Skate, how's that co-op? Someone's supposed to say, Skate, how's that co-op?
Skate, how's that co-op?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mike. apparently the way it works is you develop skate teams, and you guys can kind of like work in real time and build skate parks, and there's like co-op specific goals and tricks you can do and things like that. I'm guessing it kind of has a little bit of Burnout Paradise feel to some of the challenges and stuff in the game with the co-op.
I think it's really interesting that this seems to be their really big focus with Skate 3 is this like teamwork and working together with people. And I think that's a much more interesting way for them to kind of expand the Skate franchise with more games rather than just doing the Tony Hawk style of like every year releasing a new game that has a new layer of tricks that makes it more complicated. So hopefully, like, if they continue making skate games, it's more of this style of, like, expanding the gameplay in a different way than that, than just making more complicated trick sets.
I have a snarky wish for this game.
Yeah.
I want it to support the Tony Hawk Ride Board.
Oh, man.
And be a better game.
I don't...
Because that would just tickle me.
I think these skate guys are just, like... I mean, you know, I don't know that... the skate guys necessarily expected Tony Hawk to do good, but I have to imagine. I was thinking about this earlier because I played Ride this week, actually. I tried it out, and I have to imagine the skate team just like is looking at the release of that game and just like laughing and just happy that, you know, like they must have been curious, like, what if this does end up being good? We're going to have to make one with a plastic board then. But now they're like, oh, awesome. We don't have to worry about that. We can just keep going with our thing.
Anyway, yeah, moving on, a big May release, which was kind of a... I think this was a pretty big surprise to people when it was announced as a co-op title, is Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. And it's a PSP game with four-player LAN ad hoc campaign co-op in the Metal Gear universe. I guess it's a prequel to 3?
No, it's a sequel to 3.
Sequel to 3.
Well, actually, let's see... I think Portable Ops was a continuation of, you know, the storyline set in 3, and this takes place after Portable Ops, but both of those take place before Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And I think this one actually, like, if you really want to go back, this actually takes place before the first Metal Gear.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's very awesome. The demo is great.
I just remember seeing that you send dudes up with balloons, and that looked ridiculous.
Well, did you play Portable Ops?
No, but I'm familiar with sort of the workings of Portable Ops.
Well, you had to like recruit guys, and you drag people back to that truck to, you know, keep them from, you know, waking up and patrolling in the level, and that made up such a significant portion of Portable Ops that it really dragged things down. So they basically said, okay, if you want to get rid of a dude, you know, strap this weather balloon to him and send him off flying on a mystical adventure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully it will streamline the game a little more. But it controls really well, and I really enjoyed the demo. I played the Japanese version and fumbled through it and enjoyed it then, and then when I had everything, you know, written out for me in English, and like, aha, now I know how to play this, and I was able to go through it pretty easily, and it's really fun.
Yeah, it's a shame that it's only ad hoc co-op. I don't know if it works with the whole, whatever you call it,
ad hoc party
fancy thing. Yeah, ad hoc party, thank you.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what changes with the co-op in it.
Well, you can do all the like co-op maneuvers, right? So you can hook together, like you can stick to another player in a formation and like move around, so you'll have one player watching the rear, one going forward, and there's a lot of stuff like that as far as I've seen. And there's the love box.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks pretty interesting. That's a spring title. Another spring title, one that got delayed, was Lost Planet 2, that has a four-player online co-op campaign. That's 360 and PS3. Did you guys play the demo for this when they released it? I guess it was E3.
Well, you remember I quite famously hated the demo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. you were all down on it.
Yeah. Everyone else on staff was like, this is awesome! And then I said, boom.
That's because you got eaten by the giant worm and he didn't poop you out.
Yeah, the game bugged up on me, and well, what it was is when you go through the worm and he poops you out after you make your way through it, he pooped me out into a bottomless pit, and I, at that point I said, I'm done with this game.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of the original Lost Planet, so I'm one of the few people I know who just isn't really excited about this as well, so I'm kind of with you there. Like, it's cool that they're trying co-op stuff, the huge monsters look incredible, and that could be really awesome if they pull it off, but I just didn't like the first game that much, so I'm very skeptical.
I liked the multiplayer in the first game a lot. I actually played a lot of the multiplayer in the first one, so I don't know. I guess we can see how that expands into the full campaign of two, but it's definitely not. I guess it doesn't do anything quite well, you know, because it doesn't. It's not a third person shooter. It's really. It's kind of. The controls are a little bit different compared to other, I guess, typical third-person shooters out there. Well, so
the thing I have against it is that a lot of Japanese multiplayer co-op games these days are trying to riff on Monster Hunter, which I don't think is a very good game. And this is pretty much like, you know, Monster Hunter shooter. So, I don't know. At least what they presented in the demo.
Yeah, but I mean, the reason that Monster Hunter... I mean, I agree with you. I don't think Monster Hunter is a terribly good game. But the main reason is just because of the, like, kind of crappy gameplay. Like, the idea of hunting huge monsters with partners is awesome. It just doesn't... They don't pull it off in a satisfying way in Monster Hunter. So yeah. If they can in this, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm not convinced
they have
that
the sense
can.
Of scale.
Yeah, definitely.
But the only game that's going to matter next spring... is the following game, and that is Crackdown 2. And it's a 360 exclusive with 4-player online campaign co-op and an 8-player online survival mode. I cannot wait to use the little magnetic grenade things that you string between buildings and vehicles.
And slingshot.
And slingshot things.
I can't wait to...
It's going
to
be great.
I can't wait to find some orbs. Like, that's seriously, that's... all I want to do this summer is, like, spend all summer... finding orbs. That's it.
You know, they should do an Orb Hunter minigame where it puts two players in the city and you have to collect all of the orbs and whoever collected more wins.
That would be
excellent. Could play co-op. You could play that for like a week per round.
It's an interesting concept. So, and I'm curious to see what the new orbs are because they said that there's going to be more than just the agility and the secret orbs. And so we'll see what they add to that and go from there. But
you know what would be awesome is if the orbs they had like sonic rings in the levels too. So not only would you get the satisfaction of picking up an orb, but you'd get the sonic ring, which is usually pretty fun as well.
Sounds good to me.
Yes.
And the final mid-year kind of release that we have on schedule currently is Canon Lynch 2 Dog Days. It's 360, PS3, and PC. There's a 2-player online/local campaign, and then there's going to still be a return of the Fragile Alliance mode, but they haven't said how many people that's going to support. I think the last game was 4. So
you know, I actually credit the first game with launching Giant Bomb, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
So I hope something equally awesome will come out of this one.
That is a huge boon for the first game. About the only huge boon that it has. But, like, it's a little awkward listening to... when you listen to the Giant Bomb cast, when they talk about Canon Lynch 2, it's a little bit awkward hearing them talk about it. It's like, I wonder what these guys are feeling emotionally as they're talking about this game.
They're gonna, you know, do a quick look at it, and it'll be hilarious.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I guess I'm one of the few that actually really liked Canon Lynch. It wasn't the best game in terms of mechanics, but I thought what it did with the characters and the story, like, very few games have the balls to do, so... I'm looking forward to seeing where they take it with the second one. So, did either of you guys play through the first game?
No,
it can't. I was interested in it, and then there was just the controversy, and I felt like I really just didn't want to involve myself with it because I wasn't that interested in it in the first place, and I don't know. I didn't really want to add my voice to the mix of like, oh, this game. You know, not only deserves a 7 out of 10, it deserves, you know, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. You know? I don't know. stupid. But I do like the idea of the unreliable co-op partner. I think that's kind of a cool thing. I actually hope one thing I hope, because the first game didn't actually do anything about that, right? You just play this two guys.
Well, the second player did. If you played as Lynch in the co-op, there'll be things where, like, there's innocent civilians, but player two would see him as cops, like cops trying to get you. So they wouldn't know, and they'd be shooting them up when really they're innocent people and causing more chaos to happen. So it was kind of hinted at lightly in it. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the second
one. Like, if they really explored that and did something, like, that's pretty cool sounding, but if they did something like the insanity stuff in Eternal Darkness for, you know, the unreliable dude, that would be pretty wacky. Because you not only would, you know, the one player not be seeing that, but, you know, if they're playing, like, online co-op, he'd be hearing his partner, like, oh my god, what the hell, in his headset, and it would, you know, cause some tension, I think, that actually doesn't really exist in a lot of co-op games. Like, we talked about Resident Evil 5, not, like, it's not a very scary game to begin with, but, you know, for a game with a survival horror pedigree, it, you know, the co-op pretty much put so much levity into it that it took away all the tension. Like, the game might get hard at points, but you're like, look at this ridiculous crap, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if the players are actually separated by distance and they, you know, the one's trying to communicate that all this wacky crap is happening that the other guy can't see, it might actually bring that tension back, however artificially. I don't know.
All right, so let's move on from the middle of the year to the second half or end of 2010. And there's a couple of titles we know are definitely coming out in the fall. At least we hope so. The biggest is probably Halo Reach. And I think... what was it? Unveiled at the Spike VGAs, the first trailer for that.
I have an inkling that there will be a lot more Halo Reach information coming very soon from some source. There's an inkling that I have, just a feeling. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Will there be a wraparound cover, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm just telling you that I have a feeling. I'm not saying anything. Just a feeling that I have.
A little tickle in your belly?
You said Halo Reach, and I just got this... I don't know, it just made me feel something.
Phil, it's not Halo Reach Around.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind then.
Yeah. But, so that's... We're hoping... my assertion from the trailer was maybe 5 or 6 player co-op. We shall see.
I can hope, because...
We can hope.
Halo is kind of my high point for co-op shooters. Just, it's always fun, no matter how many people you bring along.
So did you guys not get... burnt out at all by ODST? Because I feel like there's kind of a feeling from some people, kind of myself included, that after ODST they were just kind of like, I don't know if I need another Halo for a while.
I dug what ODST did a lot more than most people. I for one really enjoyed the parts of the Rookie, but I really liked looking for the audio logs and stuff. And actually, when I finally collected all 30, and if you actually went that far, the last level, the data hive level, changes if you have 29 logs going into it, because the 30th log is actually in that level. So you get to take a detour and see some stuff that you don't normally. But I sat down and I played, you know, I played all the audio logs in sequence, and it's like an hour long. Like, I just sat there for, you know, literally an hour listening to this stuff, and I really liked it, but I think...
I love Bees-ish.
Yeah, I like the Halo combat enough that I don't necessarily need the plot to propel me forward to play it. Like, I thought roaming around the city and getting the random ambushes or the brute squads coming around was always fun.
Sure.
But a lot of people are like, it's dark, I can't see, and damn it, I can't dual wield, and I'm not Master Chief when...
Yeah. Hey, we played Firefight for, what, 3 hours straight?
Yeah, right? And the thing is, Firefight is amazing.
Firefight is incredible. Like, I will definitely give you that. Firefight is something that I feel like I will continue returning to. But that's part of why I say I don't know that I necessarily need a new Halo relatively soon, because I feel like with ODST, I will keep returning to that to play Firefight. And I'll, you know, every once in a while I'll pop in and play some Halo online. But I don't know. I'm still fuzzy on what Halo Reach is going to bring that is going to make me want another Halo game so soon. But hopefully I will find out more info soon.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, and yeah, it might be a little much to have it next year, mm-hmm. but, you know, I actually don't play Halo for the competitive multiplayer. I play it for the co-op.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mostly
oddly
agree.
Enough, the story, which is kind of ridiculous, because it's interesting but lame at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is the first back-to-back Halos that Microsoft's going to do. Before, they were just kind of alternating between Gears of War and Halo.
Well, it's the three-peat, because we had Halo Wars earlier this year.
Yeah, that doesn't really count, though. I mean, I guess it kind of does, but...
Yeah,
anyway, let's move on.
Okay.
We have Rage coming out in the fall as well, which is id's next shooter. And it's 360, PS3, and PC, and as far as we know, only two-player co-op specific missions, not co-op for the whole game, which is kind of a surprise for an id game, because they kind of are the fathers of the co-op first-person shooter.
I am very worried about Rage, because I get the feeling if it doesn't do well, we might not be seeing too much from id.
Didn't id just get bought by someone or something?
They got bought by Bethesda, okay. But...
I mean, because I think Bethesda's doing okay right now. Yeah, I don't know. I hope that Rage is good, just because we've been waiting for so long for it.
Yeah, but id makes so much of their money on engine licensing, and Epic kind of single-handedly stole that market from them.
Yeah, they're creaming them.
That's the other reason Rage kind of needs to do good, I think. I think it needs to be something where... it's such an impressive tech demo for this engine that id can be like, hey, look how awesome this engine is. Try this instead of Unreal Engine.
Yeah, and I think the game needs to be a little more substantial than just a tech demo. Like the first.
Well, yeah, obviously it does, but.
But you go back to like Doom 3, and Doom 3 was very like this tech is nice, but this game is way too long for being a corridor shooter. And, you know, there's so many missteps with, like, the flashlight and whatnot. A lot of people started losing faith that they could actually create a game that was fun, that wasn't just an engine showcase.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, I'm definitely curious. I mean, everything we've heard about Rage sounds like there's more to it than that. Like, they're trying to do more of a, like, from what I recall hearing, more of, like, an open-world, story-based. It sounds like there's vehicle stuff as well. I mean, it sounds definitely more ambitious, but it'll be interesting to see if they can pull it off. I think id has already announced that they're working on a Doom 4, right? So
yeah, and I think more Wolfenstein and things like that.
Yeah.
The thing that really gets me about Rage is, at least before Borderlands changed its art style, how similar those two games looked.
Yep.
Despite Borderlands being, you know, very heavy on the role-playing and loot, like aesthetically, it was almost like looking at the same game. And thankfully... The art style will make that a little less apparent, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I still want to play it because I really like id, and John Carmack is just he's one of the more interesting people out there. I feel.
Oh yeah, he's. Definitely. I still remember one of the stories where I think it was like the Quake 3 engine. Maybe he like programmed in a hotel room over like a weekend in Hawaii or something like that. Like, the guy is just ridiculously smart.
Yeah, have you ever read Masters of Doom, the book about id? Like, that, just reading about the culture in that studio, and, you know, particularly the personalities, was pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, the final game of the year that we definitely know is coming is Brink, and that's from Bethesda, actually. Well, Bethesda published and developed by Splash Damage. And that's an 8-player online co-op game. Everything we see from it looks pretty interesting. Basically, there's a bunch of different character classes you can pick from, and the game's said to have kind of dynamic missions that adjust depending on what character classes are in a mission at a time and stuff like that. It kind of came out of nowhere, and it's been, from what we've seen, it looks pretty impressive.
I have a prediction.
Yes?
That Brink for 2010 will be what Borderlands was to our forums in 2009.
I hope so, because they're trying some really cool stuff. I really want them to pull it off because Splash Damage is such a talented developer, and it seems like they cannot get a break with, you know, they release really great games, but they just don't hit the way that they need them to. Like, Quake Wars was anime territory. Quake Wars was an excellent game, but just people didn't pick up on it.
I think it was perceived to be way too similar to Battlefield, which already kind of cornered that market.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you've played it, it's not very similar to Battlefield. I mean, it's definitely its own thing. And I don't know. Like,
oh, definitely.
Splash Damage, like I said, it always makes me sad when I see a developer who's clearly extremely talented, but just can't quite, their games just aren't getting quite the recognition that they deserve. So I hope that this one, they finally pull it off. And it sounds like they've got a really unique setting, really unique gameplay ideas, so hopefully it will.
Yes.
Yeah. So a couple games that are up in the air, we've seen them announced, but we have no idea if they're coming or not. Aliens Colonial Marines, we've talked about that a couple times now. I'm guessing it's not going to be a 2010 title, especially with the AVP coming in March or April. We have Warriors Legends of Troy. That's a Dynasty Warriors-ish kind of game. From what we've seen, but there was, so far, I think all we've got was like a little teaser trailer, which is basically some concept art in trailer form. So we'll see where that goes. Def Jam Rapstar, I think we'll probably see earlier this year.
I did not know this existed. Is EA doing it again? Another Def Jam?
Yeah. No, this is it's a music game. But it's all hip-hop stuff.
It's hip-hop karaoke revolution, right?
Wow.
Yeah, basically. I can't remember who's developing it, but the promo videos that have been put out for it are really well done. Should definitely check those out if you get a chance. So yeah, hopefully we'll see that earlier this year. Hip-hop kind of is one of the few genres of music missing, I think, from most of the music games. So we'll see how that goes. Kingdom Under Fire 2 for 360 and PC. That's more of a, I guess it's more of an MMO based one now. There's some big, massive online stuff with it. And I believe the PC version is actually coming first. I don't know if you guys ever. It's more like the. I always get confused. There's the crappy Kingdom Under Fire, which is like the third person kind of RPG-ish one, and then there's the one that's more like RTS RPG, and that's what it's more like. So, and then there's Inversion, which was, I think, announced probably about a month or two ago, and that's the, it's a shooter that plays on gravity. It's by the same devs that did Time Shift. I don't know if you guys played that game. And it's supposed to have co-op in that as well, which could be interesting. And that about wraps up the games that we have in our database, at least so far, of coming out in 2010. But hopefully we'll see some stuff maybe announced earlier this year. There's a ton of freaking conventions and stuff. We got PAX East coming up, GDC. But let's wrap things up because we are... What are we going on here?
For hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
Ah, come on. Nice. We could go for another couple hours at this rate.
Easily.
With you on, I'll go all night.
Excellent.
How's that sound? Yeah.
Oh, so this is now the Co-Opticast After Dark?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Welcome to the Co-Opticast.
Hey, baby, welcome all to right. Co-Opticast.
So let's just go over a couple things, rounding things out. There's no upcoming co-op releases in the next 2 weeks.
Shock.
Amazingly. I know. But we have some good features on the site. We had reviews of Alien Breed Evolution on Xbox Live Arcade, Revenge of the Wounded Dragons on PlayStation Network, Pixel Junk Shooter on PlayStation Network, Guitar Hero Van Halen on a bunch of platforms, and then an interesting browser-based game called Guns of Icarus on the PC. And we had a few features. We had a developer interview for Final Fantasy, The Crystal Chronicles, The Crystal Bears, longest freaking game title ever. We did a co-op classics covering Ikari Warriors and that awesome little joystick thingy it had in the arcade cabinet. There was a Battlefield report for Grand Theft Auto 4, and we had our Beyond Co-op reviews. I see that was added.
I tried to get it before you passed the reviews.
I think that about wraps up this pretty awesome podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, are you sure you don't want to talk for another, like, couple hours? Like, we can...
What do you want to talk about? Let's talk... We can keep talking.
About Mike. I mean, he's... So pretend he's not here, and let's just talk. Let's air the truth. What do you feel about Mike?
I think his hair is kind of funny.
Seriously, dude. Like, what is up with that? That doesn't even make sense.
I think your hair is longer than mine.
That's why it's funny.
Oh, I hate you.
But, yeah. Anyway, so if you are listening to us on iTunes, please leave feedback. I mean, we have Philip Kohler on the show. 5 stars, thumbs up.
You're
going to
get, like, negative reviews because you're going to be like, this is the longest episode of the Co-opticast ever, and the only reason that it was so long is that I had to listen to this jerk talk about stuff I don't care about. He kept talking about...
Plugging Game
Informer. He kept giving links to Game Informer's website. Like, I don't know. Whatever.
Well, you know, it's only fair that, you know, we're not paying you to be here, so we got to let you plug
stuff.
Whoa,
whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're not paying me?